Werbung. Wenn du Lustprinzip hörst, dann magst du wahrscheinlich Sex. Ich auch. Und ich mag Cheeks, eine Plattform für feministische Pornografie und sexuelle Bildung. Cheeks ist ein Streamingdienst auf Abo-Basis für einen neuen, selbstverständlichen Umgang mit deiner Sexualität. In der Cheeks Academy kannst du in regelmäßigen Live-Workshops direkt von SexpertInnen lernen, wie du mit deiner Lust und Intimität noch besser umgehen kannst. Außerdem hast du bei Cheeks unbegrenzten Zugang zu garantiert fair produzierter feministischer Pornografie. Das alles bekommst du ab 9,90 Euro im Monat, wenn du dich für ein Jahresabo entscheidest, also für 118 Euro im Jahr oder für 14,90 in der monatlich kündbaren Version. Klingt das gut? Dann habe ich da was für dich. Mit dem Code LUST7, LVST, 7 als Zahl, kannst du das Cheeks Jahresabo heute als Neukundin ganz unverbindlich 14 Tage lang kostenlos testen und jederzeit während oder nach der Probezeit kündigen. Geh dafür jetzt auf getcheeks.com, das ist getcheeks.com mit dem Code LUST7. Ihr findet den Code, meinen Direktlink und weitere Infos zu Cheeks auch in den Shownotes. Wie fühlt es sich an, mit 60 zu tindern? Warum haben alte Leute mehr Sex als junge? Und warum haben junge Leute so viel weniger Sex als Gleichaltrige vor 20 Jahren? Kann man ein Teil des Systems sein und es gleichzeitig hinterfragen? Und was ist von Sex in the City eigentlich übrig geblieben? Darüber reden wir heute mit Candace Bushnell.
Wer ist eigentlich dieser Sex? Oh wow, präsentiert Lustprinzip, der Podcast von Theresa Lachner.
Die heutige Podcast-Folge ist ein bisschen anders als sonst. Sie wird auf Englisch sein. Wer nicht so gut Englisch kann oder keine Lust hat, mir auf Englisch zuzuhören, kann ich das diesmal auch in schriftlicher Form durchlesen, und zwar auf die Standard.at. Wir packen den Link natürlich in die Shownotes. Ich werde meiner Gästin leider nicht persönlich gegenüber sitzen können, sondern es wird per Zoom stattfinden, denn sie ist in New York. Es ist ein absoluter Superstar und quasi die Ikone meiner Jugend, Candace Bushnell, die Autorin von Sex and the City, die Frau, die meine Karriere wahrscheinlich geprägt hat als jeder andere Mensch, weil ich mir schon im Teenageralter dachte, es könnte doch wahnsinnig cool sein, über Sex zu schreiben, und davon kann man sich sicher eine Wohnung in New York leisten und sehr, sehr viele Schuhe. Irgendwie hat das dann auch fast genauso geklappt, und ich freue mich sehr, heute mit ihr per Zoom sprechen zu können. Sie hat ein neues Buch, das heißt Is There Still Sex in the City? Und befasst sich unter anderem damit, wie Frauen über 50, über 60 so daten. Ich freue mich wahnsinnig, dass sie heute hier ist. Candace Bushnell. Thank you so much for being here. So, I mean, Sex and the City came out 24 years ago. So I actually read and watched it before I had sex myself. So it's hard for me to remember how it was before that. But can you guess why it was so revolutionary at the time?
I think one reason is, you know, it was timing. And it was really, you know, there had been a bit of an accumulation of feminism, and there was a change in women's lives in the late 70s and 80s. And it was really a lot of the tail end of the baby boomer women and Gen Xers going into the workplace. So women, there was a group of women who were delaying marriage. They were going to college, they were delaying marriage, and they were going into the workforce to have careers. You're too young to remember this, but in the 1980s, there was the big, you know, push for the career woman. And that woman turned into the Sex and the City woman in her 30s. And there were all of these single women in their 30s, and there weren't supposed to be any single women in their 30s. So it really captured a new reality. And then it gave women, I think, a new way to look at their lives. You know, in the past, your life pattern was maybe you'd go to college, but you were definitely going to get married and have kids. And the Sex and the City years became a time of exploration after college. You know, before you get married, when you have lots of girlfriends, you are pursuing your own dreams and, you know, becoming more of a whole person before you end up, you know, finding a partner.
Your new book is called Is There Still Sex in the City? And I mean, is there?
Yes, but less.
Okay.
The reality is that, I mean, the people who are probably having less sex are younger people.
Uh-huh.
You could probably speak to this, you know, much better than I can, but they have, you know, they've done all these studies. I don't know how they do these studies or these research, but they have found that younger people have sex much less often than, you know, people of their age 20 years ago or even 10 years ago. I think a lot of that has to do with the internet and with porn and just there are a lot of other distractions. And it's true for, you know, for middle-aged people as well. And I mean, what I've found is, you know, if you're middle-aged, you've lived long enough so that you can kind of figure out a bit about what you want and how to get it. So, you know, if you want to be out there having sex, you will be able to find plenty of partners, I'm sure. And, you know, and there are other people who are like, you know what, I've been, you know, pawed by my ex-husband, you know, for years of being obligated to have sex. And I don't think I ever want to have sex again. So you have the two different extremes.
Yeah, that would have been my next question, actually, that statistically speaking, your generation has a lot more sex than mine.
Well, also, you know, the biggest increase in STDs are amongst the over 50 set. And there are also, and this was one of the things that I was going to investigate, but I couldn't figure out how to do it. They're not really retirement homes, but they're communities for people over 50, you know, maybe centered around a golf course or something like that. And apparently those places are rife with, you know, sex scandals and people having affairs and, you know, people having sex. And so those people are, you know, they're more retired. And what is there to do?
Yeah. Do you know about these like cruise ships? I've heard cruise ships are one of the places where, you know, they're for elderly people mostly and they have the most sex there, I think. Yeah. It's also a thing. Yeah.
Wow. Well, you know, I've found that if you are somebody who, you know, you like sex, you will probably continue to do it. But, you know, not everybody likes sex. That's one of the things that you realize as life goes on. I mean, there are people who they've never really had a very good sexual experience.
Yeah. That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Sex in the City back in the days, I feel like has made this whole concept of hookup culture, whatever exactly that means, like more popular and more acceptable in a way too, right?
You know, I would say yes and no, because maybe it's just the word hookup that I object to. I mean, the crazy thing is when I first moved to New York in the late 70s and early 80s, it seemed like there was so much sex everywhere. And, you know, you would go out, you know, walk down the street. And I mean, I met people walking down the street. You start talking, you continue talking. Sometimes you'd go and have sex. So, you know, there's that part of it. And then there's also the other side where if it's only hookups, that's not satisfying either. So it's a push-pull of, you know, the freedom to do it, but that shouldn't be the only kind of mode of having sex. And it seems like it's tipped over, you know, a little bit more into that fast, easy, you know, no consequences kind of hookup culture. But it seems like the hookup culture's really increased.
Yeah.
I mean, that was one of the things that I felt that I really noticed a lot when I was, you know, for instance, I did the story on Tinder.
Exactly. That's my favorite chapter from your new book, where you find out the truth about Tinder. Can you tell our listeners a bit more about that?
I had never heard women complain so much about men. And I'd also never heard men complain so much about each other. I mean, look, of course, on all of these apps, people do meet on Tinder and they get married. It's probably a very small percentage. But there's something about Tinder that, it, in a sense, it brings out the worst in us. It brings out the most superficial. I'm just going to judge people on their looks. I'm going to judge people really, really fast. And it seems to play into women's worst nightmares about what men really think about women.
Mm-hmm.
And there seems to be a lot of disrespect and also sadness, I found, because people had their feelings hurt. I mean, it just basically comes down to having your feelings hurt again and again. And what's amazing to me is it's very easy to become emotionally involved with somebody on a screen, you know, with a photograph or an idea of somebody they text. And we create all of these ideas about who this person is going to be in our head. The reality is that I think people are great at judging other people in real life. And we are terrible at judging people from a photograph or a screen. And, you know, an example of that is, you know, movie stars or, you know, actors. They're never anything like what they look like on screen. So, you know, that's something that it's inherent in us and we, you know, you come up against that. So in a sense, you have to go through a lot more people to find somebody who might be of interest. But it definitely fosters a throwaway attitude towards sex, towards relationships. And it was interesting to me, and maybe it's also because of porn, but the sex that the women said that they were having, it was, you know, it was like really fast and then the guy got off and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, I mean, gosh, when I was in my 20s, we used to, yeah, I had sex for, you know, a good 30 minutes. You know, and then yeah. The guy was always supposed to make sure that the woman had the orgasm first, and then you had intercourse. So, I mean, you might be having sex for, you know, 20, 25 minutes before you hadn't even had intercourse. And that doesn't seem to be true anymore.
Wir danken unserem wunderbaren Partner Fun Factory für die Unterstützung zur heutigen Episode. Sex in the City hat ja wie keine andere Serie davor und danach dafür gesorgt, dass Sextoys popkulturell wirklich in der Mitte der Gesellschaft ankommen. Das war damals mit dem Rammler, dem Rabbit-Vibrator. Ein bisschen Toy-Kunde, weil viele Leute heute das Wort Rabbit-Vibrator verwenden, ohne überhaupt zu wissen, warum. Der erste Rabbit war so ein super hässliches Teil aus so diesem ekligen Jelly-Material. Und es ist ein Vibrator, der eben dual ist. Also innen ein Teil, vaginal, und dann außen noch ein kleiner Teil für die Klitoris. Und damals war wirklich der Klitoris-Aufsatz so ein kleines Häschen. Und dann haben so quasi die Öhrchen die Klitoris stimuliert. Und auch da kann man froh sein, dass sich da designtechnisch und materialtechnisch einiges getan hat. Wenn wir 2020 oder auch danach noch einen wirklich hochwertigen Rabbit-Vibrator kaufen wollt, gönnt euch Miss B von der Fun Factory. Das sieht gut aus, ist aus hochwertigem Silikon, extra stark und ist sehr an die Form der Vagina angepasst. Also der sitzt auch gut, möchte ich mal so sagen. Wenn ihr das jetzt ausprobieren möchtet, erhaltet ihr auf funfactory.de mit dem Code LUSTPRINZIP20 20% Rabatt auf das Toy. Und jetzt geht's weiter mit Candace. In your new book you write, casual sex is not my thing anymore. Why is that?
Because, well, you know what? It actually never was my thing.
Okay.
when I think about it, it never was my thing because there's always going to be some kind of emotional involvement for me anyway. It always kind of goes one of two ways. Like somebody likes the other person more than the other one likes them. So that you either feel guilty or you feel like an idiot. I think it's really important morally not to get involved with people in an emotional kind of way that can be damaging. And I see people do it and it's like they've got all this drama and it's like I just don't want that kind of drama.
Fair enough. So you write about cubs, so young men that date older women, like that's a thing that you see more and more happening. Is it going to be more acceptable in the future, you think?
Yes. I mean, it is. It definitely is. And it has been actually for a while. I mean, I married, my husband was 10 years younger. My sister married a guy who was 10 years younger. But this was actually a different phenomenon because these guys were so much younger. I mean, it's really more like the Dennis Quaid, who just married somebody who's, I think, in her 20s. And I do wonder, like, could that reverse really be true? I mean, maybe. But I was very surprised because these were women who were 20 years older or 25 years older. And in the past, it just really turned people off. Like the thought of it just go, which says something about how we feel about older women. But that's really changed really because of porn and the MILF and this depiction of the hot older woman.
MILF ist ein englisches Akronym für Mother I'd Like to Fuck. Wörtlich übersetzt, Mutter, die ich gerne ficken würde. Es ist ein umgangssprachlicher, durch den Film American Pie bekannt gewordener und später durch die Pornoindustrie noch weiter popularisierter Ausdruck für Frauen mittleren Alters, die aus der Sicht anderer Personen eine attraktive Sexualpartnerin darstellen. Quelle Wikipedia.
So, you have these young guys that they've grown up with that as a turn on. So that I do think is something that it truly is different, certainly different than, 100 years ago, 50 years ago, 30 years ago.
Yeah, that's great. And compared to, I'd say, the 90s, do you feel like feminism has become more relevant in the US right now?
Yes, it has. This always feels like there's so much infighting, you know, yeah. of like, who's a feminist? What's it? It's like, this is not feminism. You know, there are women being murdered by men, okay, who are their husbands, or in countries it's legal to murder women for a variety of, you know, reasons. Like, that we need to fix. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, to me, you know, that is feminism. And we need to have, women need to have, you know, this, all the same personhood rights as men. And, you know, they need to be able to financially support themselves in the world without the aid of a man.
Yeah.
And, I mean, heterosexual sort of systems with women are all over the world. It's like, it's a, you know, it feels like it's some form of prostitution. You know, that's the, you know, economic system for most women around the world, or it has been. And, you know, women going out and, you know, potentially, you know, being able to be a lawyer or a doctor or a, you know, a CEO, and, you know, potentially to make millions of dollars is, you know, it's a big thing.
So you would equal like financial wealth with power, with, you know, being empowered?
Well, you know, there's personal empowerment. And, you know, personal power has to do in some ways, you know, with, do you have agency over yourself in a way? Yeah. Are you able to move through life? Are you able to accomplish things? Do you have discipline? You know, all those things are personal power. And yes, making money, making your own money out in the world is empowering.
Yeah.
Being able to buy your own house is empowering. I mean, that's the reality.
Yeah. Would you refer to yourself as a feminist?
Oh, totally. I mean, yeah. I've probably been a feminist since I was four.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been a feminist ever since I had to go around men, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
Which was when I had to go to kindergarten.
So you're on Instagram as well, I've seen, right?
I am. And apparently it's so important, you have to do it. I don't know. I mean, I get like one follower, a new follower a month. I have so many unfollowers.
Do you know this Vogue Charlotte memes? Have you heard of that?
I have heard of it. There's so many Sex and the City spinoff sites on Instagram. I love it, actually. I guess like Sex and the City, it's really like in the public domain, and it's interesting how the public plays with these characters. And, you know, transforms them. That's amazing. And I will tell you that Woke Charlotte has way more Instagram followers than I do.
So how do you feel about this whole Woke culture, political correctness thing that's happening now?
You know, I actually think it's good. I mean, it's great that so many young people are doing this, because this is exactly what young people should be doing. You should question everything. Question all the structures. Question, you know, relationships. You know, question the status quo. And I feel like that's one of the reasons why I'm a writer, is because I always want my readers. I mean, I think my writing is dark and it's harsh because I want You know, I want women to question like the status quo and question what you've been fed. So I think it's great. And, you know, and the reality, I think, is also as one gets older and you move through your 20s and into your 30s, you see that, yes, in some way, if you're going to survive, you have to become part of the system.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people's feelings do tend to change a bit when they, you know, if they feel like they are able to become part of the system. It's just, you know, the way it works. But I think, you know, it'll probably bring some changes, which is good. I mean, I think we should question everything. And we should question the economics, you know, that have been all set up by men.
Mm-hmm. So do you still question everything, even though you're super successful and part of the system in a way?
I mean, first of all, I don't feel super successful.
No? You're Candace Bushnell. Who else?
No, but you know, but I don't have, I live like really modestly. I don't walk around like, oh, yeah, I'm super successful. No, it doesn't happen. Most of the time I'm like, you know, I'm not successful. I've got to get to work. So I don't feel super successful. But, you know, I am really fascinated, you know, by like what fame and money does to people. So I like to observe super successful people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I won't ever have that mindset.
Yeah, but I think that's good for writing, right? If you feel like you have it all figured out, then why write?
Exactly. I mean, you know, if I was worth like $20 million, why would I write? You know, it's like, it's hard.
I know.
It's just so
tell me
easier
about it.
Not to do it.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, but I read on the internet that your new book, Is There Still Sex in the City, is already being adapted into a TV series. So that does sound pretty successful, right?
You know, it's like, it sounds successful, but the reality is that you don't know. I mean, these things could go, they can go away tomorrow. And I mean, I think I sold it a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And I have a writing partner. We still haven't written the pilot script.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like everything is in these tiny little steps. You know, you do an outline of the outline of the outline. Now I think we're at the outline, and now maybe they'll tell us that we can write the script. Like everything has to be approved at every stage. And there are about 6 people who have to approve it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they might shoot a pilot. You don't even know if they're going to shoot the pilot. You don't know. They might, okay. They might not. Then once they shoot the pilot, then you often have to wait to, you know, for months to find out whether or not it's going to be a TV series. So it's, you know, there are no guarantees.
Yeah.
That's why I do the work. You know, when I was younger, I used to be like, oh, it's going to happen. But I realized that getting all worked up about it, you know, it's not going to make any difference, because these things happen or not happen, it's often out of your hands.
So speaking of stuff that turns out different than planned, how is the whole COVID-19 pandemic affecting, you know, like, I'm sure your book release right now, and I mean, your life, is it What does it do for you at the moment?
Well, it's been, I don't want to say, hard, because, the toilet's still flush and the electricity still works. So, and there's food. But yeah, that's like the spending, I spend a lot of time alone, but felt like it was like 12 weeks in the lockdown. Yeah. But luckily, I guess because we did it early, I'm on Long Island, not in New York City, which was very lucky. Things are starting to open up. It's better, but it's a disaster.
Yeah. What do you think it will do to how our sex and dating lives will change? Now we have this new normal where we're not supposed to touch someone else.
I don't know. You have to tell me. What do you think? Because people ask me all the time, so I'm just going to tell them what you said, because you're a sex expert and you're in your 30s. So you would know. What will you do?
Well, here in Germany and Austria, shops have opened up again a month and a half ago. So things do feel normal-ish now. And now people are like, oh, can I hug you or not? Is that cool? And it was interesting while we were still in lockdown, because it was very strict over here. There would literally be police officers in the street controlling if you came too close to another person. So everything felt really you had to be super secretive if you wanted to date someone. And it was interesting. It was like you went on long walks with another person, got to know them first, really started discussing the whole, whatever fluid bond you would get into, which you should do anyways. I kind of liked how it slowed things down in the dating department as well. But now that things are going back to normal, I feel like people start to think less about it already again. So that's another thing that's getting back to normal now, probably. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's exactly what you said. People are, they're going to spend more time talking and getting to know each other and getting to know where you've been. I wonder about this myself too, because I think about people who spent a lot of time alone in quarantine. And will those people say, hey, you know what? I need to be with somebody.
Yeah.
I wonder about that. Will it make people have more value in relationships?
It would be nice, right?
Yes, it would be.
Mm-hmm. I think we can agree on that. So I think that's it from my side. I could talk to you for hours, because obviously you're my godmother in a way. Well, Candace, thank you so much for your time and talking to us. And all the best for your book release in Germany. And speak soon, hopefully.
Great. Thank you so much.
Candace Bushnells neues Buch Is There Still Sex in the City ist vor kurzem bei Dumont erschienen. Lest auf jeden Fall mal rein. Wir danken auch nochmal Fun Factory ganz, ganz besonders für das Sponsoring zur heutigen Episode und für Miss B, den Rabbit Vibrator, den wir 2020 gerne verwenden wollen. Was haben wir heute gelernt? Ich freue mich immer wahnsinnig, mit gerade älteren Frauen über das Thema Sex und Beziehungen zu sprechen, weil sie so einen ganz anderen Blick darauf haben als wir und einfach eine viel breitere Perspektive. Ich habe dann immer das Gefühl, okay, es wird eigentlich alles nur noch besser und es wird noch interessanter. Und ich mag gerade diesen nüchternen Blick auf Dating, den Candace so hat. Also seitdem ertappe ich mich auch immer öfter dabei, dass ich mir denke, Online-Dating, wirklich? Ist das nicht alles Quatsch? Ich finde auch super, was sie über Autonomie gesagt hat und dass es eben auch wirklich um finanzielle Unabhängigkeit geht. Wenn ihr euch damit noch ein bisschen mehr auseinandersetzen wollt, lege ich euch Investorella aus dem Hause, oh wow, ans Herz. Das ist ein Podcast über nachhaltiges Investment. Ansonsten, you know the drill, empfiehlt diesen Podcast weiter, liked uns im Internet, gebt uns viele Sternchen. Ich sage das immer, aber ich meine das ernst. Gebt uns wirklich mal ein bisschen mehr Sternchen. Und wir hören uns in 2 Wochen wieder mit dem wundervollen Patrick Cartus, der uns mal erklärt, was eigentlich bei heterosexuellen Cis-Männern so alles schiefläuft und auch, wie wir es besser machen können mit ihm.
Wer ist eigentlich dieser Sex? Dieser Podcast wurde präsentiert von...
Oh, wow.